Hey there, fantasy sports fans. Listen up because I have something you're going to want to hear. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? And that's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's just me and more than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft 2. Play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want, and all new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LOCAVS. That's right, playing a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOCAVS. But it gets even better, because Draft is so sure that you'll love it, they're even offering Locked On Cavaliers listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. So search Draft in your app store, or go to draft.com, and come play for free right now with the promo code LOCAVS.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan, and he is not at the day spa this time. He is instead working super hard at the Star Wars premiere. He has traded in his cucumbers over his eyes to instead go watch Darth Vader and whoever else is in that stuff nowadays. I am instead joined by Chris Manning, who hosts Locked On Cavs and runs Fear the Sword, and we also work together on content for LockedOnCavs.com. So, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. So far I've learned that I think I need to move to LA and take Harrison's job is basically what I'm getting out of this, because I would like to go to the Star Wars premiere, and B, it going to a day spa sounds pretty nice. It's pretty cold, and I would like to relax. Like, relaxing sounds pretty nice.
He has a pretty cush lifestyle. I can't lie. I think at some point I might have to dock his pay. I might have to bring that up in contract negotiations. Good thing Harrison doesn't listen to the show. But basically, we're going to start the show. Chris and I are going to talk about some of the Cavs Lakers game, which kind of went as I thought it would. I thought it was fun. The guys that you wanted to see flashes from showed flashes, and then it turned out that the Cavs have LeBron, so that really helps in these matters. And the Lakers wind up losing to the Cavs 121-112. Today's show, though, is brought to you by mybookie.ag. Use that mybookie.ag, and it's the only betting site that I approve personally. As always, find the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Let's go ahead and get to this game. Chris, I hate it when it comes down to, like, well, one team makes shots, the other team doesn't make shots, and there you go. Like, but the Cavs were out of their minds from 3-point range tonight.
Yeah, I think you saw something in this game that are normal Cavs things. For one, I don't know why teams are leaving LeBron open from three anymore. Now, he goes 1-for-6 in this game, but The Lakers continually left him from when they were helping on somebody or just LeBron was roaming outside. I think he makes a lot of teams pay for that. And the Cavs, Jose Calderon going 5-for-8 from 3 in itself is pretty bananas. Like, that in itself, just this old Spanish man hitting 5 threes in an NBA game in 2017 is quite weird. The Cavs are a team that when they get even a little bit of 3-point shooting, and tonight's even a weird night because you look at, you know, Love's 4-for-6 and whatnot, but LeBron's 1-for-6. JR only gets 2 attempts off. Channing Frye and Kyle Korver combined to go 1-for-4. But you got a Wade 3, you got the Calderon night, and you got Love. And I think in that, when the Cavs are hitting threes just like at that kind of clip, they're really hard to beat even when they're not doing everything else necessarily all that well.
One of my kind of unwritten rules of watching basketball games is once you get that third guy who is hot from three or hotter than normal from three, that tends to separate or give you at least a really good chance to win a basketball game. And tonight, like you said, Jose Calderon had his revenge game against the Lakers that he hardly played for and had a really disappointing stretch with. And I mean, it really comes down to that. Like, he 5 of 8 from 3-point range, and he controlled the game. He's been way better than I thought anybody would have hoped for. Like, when the Cavs got Derrick Rose, it was like, oh, well, let's just hope he isn't actively hurting this team. Let's just hope they can hold down the fort until Isaiah Thomas is healthy. But Calderon, to me, like, all things considered, could be way worse from that position. And the way worse is currently away from the Cavs right now.
Yeah, the thing with Calderon that's interesting is he started a game against Orlando very early in the season, and he got bogged. Like, he got bogged. He got taken out. He didn't start the second half after starting the game, and he just got shredded by Orlando. And ever since he started, he's been really good. He knows where to go. He knows what he knows what his limitations are. He knows kind of what his role is. It's to keep the ball moving. It's to make the right play, to not make turnovers, to just help LeBron with a little bit of ball handling, and he's there to hit threes and then nowhere to be on defense. And he does that, and it gives you a level of competency out of your point guard that you weren't getting from Rose, who never seemed to fit in, and it seems like he might not play for a while, and maybe he won't play for this team again, and there's just all the questions about that. But, yeah, I mean, I think Holdy Calderon is this is like maybe his best game of the year. I think you can look at this game and the number of threes he hit and him giving Lonzo some issues. Can point to and say this was probably his best game, but he's had a lot of really solid games, and it's so crazy that the Cavs signed him on the first day of free agency, but he's at least been competent, and they've needed that without Isaiah, and like, yes, Isaiah's going to be a huge upgrade, but they've gotten a lot out of Calderon, and I agree with you. I'm fairly shocked that this has been a thing.
I'd like to see how many dribbles he has per game compared to all other starting point guards in the NBA, because I don't think I would be shocked if he's in any higher than like the 26 or 27 range of all the other all the other starting point guards across the NBA. I wanted to talk quickly. The Lakers tonight, Julius Randle only plays 22 minutes. Jordan Clarkson plays 25, but that is due in large part to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope being out. Josh Hart plays 33 minutes, and he was good. He was pretty good. He had a double-double, 11 points and 10 rebounds on 4 of 11 shooting, 1 of 4 from 3. But did it strike you, because the big conversation amongst, like right now, Lakers Twitter is freaking out because how does Julius Randle only get 22 minutes? And in those minutes, he goes 6 of 9 for 13 points, 3 assists, 4 boards. In a block, and did it kind of stick out to you? Like, did you ever think to yourself, wait, where's Randle, or why are we seeing so much Nance in this game?
Well, I really like Julius Randle, and I know you've talked about this, and it's assumed that he's going to be a casualty when the Lakers go to create cap space next summer. I don't know if that's 100% accurate, and you can certainly speak that better than me, but I think whoever gets him, if it's the right situation, is going to get someone that's kind of useful. But I also, like, what Nance kind of provides was kind of giving Kevin Love some fits, even though Kevin Love had a really good game, that athleticism is on paper something that I think went well against Kevin Love. But I also could see Julius Randle and Brook Lopez, as especially when they're together and even when they're apart, I think them as kind of a bowling ball wrecking crew duo against a Cavs front court that's going with Crowder and Love and Channing Frye and Jeff Green and no Tristan Thompson, Ante Zizic isn't going to play. That's a smaller Cavs front line. I think there's a good argument to be made there that if in this particular matchup, Randall's strength and his aggressiveness and his bully ballness inside could have been pretty valuable. And you know, maybe that leads to a couple offensive rebounds or free throws or something like that for him down the stretch that ends up making a difference.
There's more actually to this game than I thought there would be. So we're going to continue talking about it. The reason I asked that is because I'd like to see from the outside perspective if that kind of thing sticks out at like a sore thumb the way it does to people who pay more close attention to the Lakers on a night-in, night-out basis. So we're going to continue that. But before we do, do you need holiday cash? You need it, and I know where to get it. MyBookie is a place to score serious cash on your sports predictions. Believe it or not, the holidays are just around the corner, and while that means plenty of parties, gifts, and spending, it also means there's tons of football, basketball, and hockey games you can score big on every day. Man up, to quote the former Laker coach, and play like pros on game day. Oh, Cavs coach too, right? He coached you guys.
Yeah, noted Cavs legend Byron Scott out here who got fought with Deion Waiters and all these things. But yeah, had a big imprint on both franchises, weirdly enough.
He would probably single-handedly lower the or raise the line on Lakers wins on or lower the line on Lakers wins this season if he were just to step right into Luke's spot. You can play the money line side or total. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs and offers super fast payouts when you win. When you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to make money betting the games, you got to go to mybookie.ag. They're the only site I'd recommend. I trust them, but you don't have to take my word for it. Check them out yourself. You have odds on every matchup and a mobile site that makes wagering on your smartphone a breeze. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Go to mybookie.ag.com and enter promo code, I think it's LO Lakers still. You play, you win, you get paid. And also, enter LO Cavs, right? Are you guys LO Cavs?
Yeah, it's LO Cavs. Use that promo code and use my bookie. And look, we all need holiday cash. Discover Awards are only going to get you so far on your last-minute Amazon purchases. So use my bookie and pay for your holiday gifts because you definitely forgot just like I did.
All right, so back to this game really quickly because we didn't even get to Brandon Ingram, who scored a quiet 26 points, and I can't remember the last time the Lakers had a guy who could score a quiet 26 points. Like, he hit a couple big shots, and then Kevin Harlan said, wow, that's 26 for the second-year player out of Duke, and Reggie Miller started saying all kinds of nonsense, and I started muting out the TV again. But what did you think of what you saw from Brandon Ingram tonight?
I really like Brandon Ingram after this game. He's Gumby. It's just kind of like hurtful how long that dude is and how much he can. You mentioned this to me when we were talking during the game. He like disrupts things because people don't realize how long he is. And Kyle Korver is like not a small human being. You know, he's not like super long or anything like that. But there was moments where Korver got stuck on him, and I'm just like, oh my god, Kyle Korver looks tiny. Like, this is weird. And he's smooth. He looks so much more comfortable with the ball in his hands than I remember seeing him last year. And it's interesting that I wouldn't have guessed coming into the year based on the Kuzma hype, who's actually just American Jetty Osman, just throwing that out there. He's American Jetty Osman, okay? And with Lonzo and with Randall, like, Ingram's kind of been the, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but for me, as an outsider for looking at this team, he's kind of the most interesting young player on this team so far this year, and that's not something I necessarily would have expected, even if he had all of this malleable potential to be brought out of him.
I threw it out there as like a question, and my mentions were not surprising at all, but I basically asked Laker fans to rank the Lakers kind of four top prospects that they have on the roster right now. I included Lonzo, I included Ingram, I included Randall, and I included Kuzma. And I said, rank those guys in the order that you would most easily see those guys traded. And personally, I ranked them as I would least want to see Ingram traded. After him, it would go Randall. After him, it would go Lonzo. And after him, it would go Kuzma. Ingram has been that good this year, and he isn't talked about nearly enough. And it's something, it's a drum that I've been banging all summer. Outside of one bad game that he played in the last one in New York, Ingram has been the Lakers' probably best or second best overall player. And at some point he'll enter the national conversation about the Lakers beyond whether or not it's cool to crap on Lonzo Ball because LeVar Ball said a bunch of crazy stuff before the season started.
LiAngelo and LaMelo were also at this game, which I found pretty funny. There's a picture of them that's in the USA Today where you can find of them, and I'm like, what? Like, you guys got, like, this is weird. Hopefully at least went to Barrio and they went in Cleveland. Like, I hope LeVar, like, you know, did a good quick Yelp search and took them to a good taco joint, but yeah, I mean, I think you're like, I
LeVar,
think
LeVar Barrio.
Oh god, I can't.
Doesn't work.
I'm not gonna go there anymore now because I'm just gonna think of that and like bad. But
LeBario.
Yeah, you know, the other thing about this game about the Lakers I want to point out is Brook Lopez had the saddest, like, 2 minute stretch of my life. The two airballed free throws, and then he missed that lob, and that was just really painful. Like, he's like was doing. He caused Kevin Love some issues in this game, especially when Lonzo kind of hit him with those quick passes and would get when he was just setting up position. But oh my god, that was maybe like the saddest minute and a half of basketball I've seen in a long time. And like, considering like I watched Jay Crowder spread his feet out every time he shoots, like that's saying something.
I would contend, and look, I think the Cavs are going to win this game no matter what. Like, they're just a better team, and they have the best player, arguably the best player ever to play the game. But I really think the game kind of turned there because, like, he airballed the first free throw, and you got those kind of murmurs that go around the arena when a player airballs a free throw. And then he airballs the second one, and I believe, yeah, I think it was right before that, LeBron came down the lane and dunked it with all the authority. Lopez just kind of slid out of the way. And that got the crowd going. And then right after that, he airballs two free throws. And then right after that, I think LeBron hit a three. And all of a sudden, the crowd that was kind of in that kind of like, okay, guys, let's actually start playing. Let's actually start taking care of this Laker team that you should have taken care of a while ago, was into the game, and the Cavs started hitting from three, and it was just over. Like, at that point, the Lakers never really recovered. I think they got within five a couple times, but from that point on, it was really evident in ways that it wasn't early on in the game that the Lakers didn't have a chance. Poor Brook.
Yeah, it's kind of a rough going if you don't have him going. I want to ask you about the Cavs real quick too, from the outsider's perspective. One, Tristan Thompson, a late scratch in this game after only playing 6 minutes in his first game back. It doesn't seem like it's anything more than being precautionary with him, but they said last week they wanted to bring him back last week. I mean, what do you make of Thompson after his comeback, already being scratched out of a game because of calf soreness after being limited to just 6 minutes in his first game back?
I think there's an innocent explanation, and then on the other, there's some interesting stuff to maybe take a look at a little more deeply, and we're going to get to that here in a second. So I think with Tristan, look, calves and all soft tissue injuries are really hard to figure out. You know, the pulled hamstrings, the strained calves, with if you have like, you know, core soreness or any kind of like pulled ladders and anything like that, it's kind of hard. It's not quite like a sprained ankle or a hyperextended knee or whatever it might be, because you think it's fine and then you go out there and you take one wrong step and all of a sudden you're in a world of hurt again, right? So I kind of think that's the innocent explanation with Tristan Thompson, but I also think the Cavs kind of found a really nice rotation while Tristan was out. Channing Frye and Dwayne Wade are leading that bench unit, and they've been really good. They won what, 10 straight, and then I think they dropped one, right? Or I forget what the win total got up to.
They
on
got
that
up to
streak
13, which tied a franchise record for a win streak.
Yeah, and like I don't think Tyronn Lue or the Cavs are holding Tristan Thompson out, but I also don't think they're necessarily begging for him to over exude himself in getting back as quickly as humanly possible.
Yeah, I think it's complicated to bring him back. I think as much as Isaiah is going to be someone they have to acclimate to, I think Thompson, with the groove they settled in with Frye playing 7 to 10 minutes a game, that is kind of going to be something to watch of how they integrate him with Dwayne Wade, with Jeff Green, these guys who on bench units there's going to be more cramped spacing with those lineups that have been a real proponent and a real propeller of what the Cavs have done. So that's going to be something I think to watch. And I think the sooner they can get him back, the better. The other thing I want to ask you about, well, two things. One, just one sentence review of Jetty Osman, and two, Jay Crowder, 1-7 from three, had a good plus minus tonight, 25 minutes, played overall, I think, decently. But what did you make of how he played in this game?
So I'll start with Osman. Have you done any kind of like return of the Chetty or
so his, Jetty? His hashtag from the Cavs and himself is the last Jetty.
That's amazing.
And shouts to Trevor Magnotti at Illegal Screens for telling me about this. There's a video of him when he was playing in Turkey. I think it's with Furkan Aldemir, who played for the Sixers, and they're close friends. There's a he helped do a dunk contest in Jedi robes.
Unfreaking believable. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
But I liked him. I thought he was really active tonight. I like how he gets up and down the court in transition. And in general, I just like young players who understand their roles and don't try to do too much. Like, that is where a young player can get themselves into the most trouble. And I thought Osman out there tonight, he just kind of, oh, hey, look, LeBron's found me on the wing here. I'm just going to try as hard as I possibly can to finish at the rim here. Oh, hey, look, this open shot is something I can't pass up in the mid-range. All right, fine, I'll try that one, you know. And like, he only attempted 2 shots in 10 minutes, was a minus one overall. But, I mean, minus ones, that's like a random stat at that point. He had the 3 fouls in 10 minutes, which kind of tells me he's still getting himself up to NBA pace. But I think he's fine. I think he's something that Cavs fans, like, I think when you're as good a team as the Cavs are, you kind of just have to find young role players whenever you can and hope that they aren't abysmal out there. And he isn't abysmal. And then regarding Crowder, I want more from Crowder. Like, I watch him play, and I think so long, it depends on the role that they're looking for him. I think if they're just telling him, look, go out there and make LeBron's life easier on offense, just like the Lakers did with when they got Ron Artest, they just said, look, Kobe can't night in, night out, go out and guard the other team's best player and also be expected to carry the offensive load that he is. So if they're telling LeBron, if they're telling Crowder, look, whatever you do offensively is house money at that point. Just go out there and focus defensively. Fine. And it was kind of a tough matchup for him out there because he had Julius Randle, and Randle, like, he just beats up everybody. So I felt like Crowder, like, at all times tonight was just hurting in one way or another. But I thought, all things considered, he was okay. He's just kind of okay.
Yeah, that's where I am on him. I think he's had some really good games. He's been better since the start of the year, but I think getting him going is going to be something that's really important. I do think he's going to be someone that benefits from Isaiah Thomas being back, because that's someone he'll know how to play with a little bit better. And, you know, I there's been some allusions to maybe a slight ankle issue that's never fully healed. And I think, you know, coming into the season mentally, I think it's been tough for him to, after, you know, he found that his mom died the same day he got traded to the Cavs. So I think for someone like, I think there's probably still some off the court stuff he's getting used to after being in Boston for so long and being kind of going through like something major to start the year.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to ever put that into full perspective. And I don't think people quite realize, like, have you ever, what's the furthest you've ever moved?
I mean, 4 hours for college. Like, that's the, but even that was like, in not having a car to go back whenever I wanted to, that's, I mean, it's a culture change. Like, no matter what it is, it's a different lifestyle. It's different people around you. It's different comfort zones. And even if it's something kind of slight, you have to reestablish yourself from the ground up, and almost no matter how much you move.
Yeah, I you're talking about completely altering the city that you're in and the teammates that you have to figure things out around. And then you add to that the mom dying thing. Like, of course he had early season struggles. Like, when you put all that into perspective. All right. There was a report from ESPN's Ramona Shelburne and Brian Windhorst that I'm sure everybody listening to this show really wanted to hear about. For me personally, the big headline that came from it that everybody aggregated was the Lakers are now considered a long shot to sign LeBron. And when I saw, I mean, I wrote it for LockedOnCavs.com. We ran it on LakersOutsiders.com. Lakers Nation ran it.
We ran it. Fear of the Sword. Yeah, we ran it.
Yeah, Fear of the Sword ran it. It was the same headline basically run 4 or 5 times, maybe even more, across all the various blogs out there. And like, for me, nothing changed. Like, the Lakers, the idea that the Lakers were ever anything more than a long shot to sign LeBron away from Cleveland and a title contending team in Cleveland, to me, that doesn't necessarily change anything. But you found a nugget in there that you found pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think there are a couple other things in there that were interesting. I think number one, you know, there's the thing in there where it says him and Chris Paul are not necessarily super, it's not like as big of a deal that they want to play together before the end of their career. I think that was kind of interesting. Then there's the note about LeBron aggressively recruiting Paul George to come to Cleveland before the Cavs-Pacers deal fell apart this summer. you know, that doesn't necessarily prove anything. I mean, I think when LeBron left the first time, I was still fanning out basically at that point. And there was a thing in the paper where LeBron filed the paperwork to, you know, to change his jersey number, which you only had to do if you were staying with the team you're on. And I was like, oh, he's not going anywhere. And then, you know, of course, the decision happens. Like, mm-hmm. None of these little tea leaf things ultimately tell you exactly what's going to happen. And like, they confirm your bias one way or the other if you're looking for it. But recruiting Paul George like that and trying to sell him on Cleveland long term at least indicates that it's not, like, some people present this as a long term conclusion that he's just going. But the contrary of what Maverick Carter, what, you know, the people that are very close to LeBron are leaking to Windhurst and Shelburne and saying about this. I think, like, it's the long shot thing is definitely maybe like a little overpublicized, but I think there's a lot of indication that, like, the idea that this Lakers thing was ever a guaranteed thing was always probably a little bit overblown.
Yeah, I would agree. And you and I have talked about this, I think, a couple times now on various shows. And what I always come back to is the only person or the only type of person who is objectively wrong that you'll look back on and say, wow, you were stupid at the time, is the person who thinks they know what LeBron is going to do. Like, anybody who says to them who thinks that LeBron has already made up his mind either way. Like, I think if the Lakers trade for Paul George midseason and maybe not squeak into the playoffs, but contend long enough in the playoffs that LeBron says, wow, that team is myself and another piece away, including, you know, so long as Paul George sticks around, then that changes the equation on this. If LeBron is able to convince Paul George to not accept a trade, but stick around long term and long enough that the Cavs don't feel as worried about moving that Brooklyn pick in order to land him, then that changes the math. And the idea that at any point along in this entire timeline, even dating back to before the season, when the season started, when they started slowly, or when they won 13 straight games, at no point in all this, I think, has LeBron ever thought that he had his mind made up either way. And it's going to be that confirmation bias when he actually does make his decision that everybody's going to look back and say, oh, see, we should have seen this coming based on, and they could use any number of little breadcrumbs that he may or may not be leaving behind, no matter where he ends up in the summer. It's just something, it's a fun thing to talk about in the middle of the season. I kind of walked away from the piece thinking, like, this is making it sound way more important than it actually is. Like, vastly more important, hilariously so.
And I think, I do think, like, an update on the situation is probably warranted on the first time these two teams play. And, like, the Lonzo-LeBron thing is, I mean, right now as we're recording this, there's this, your picture of them talking behind closed jerseys that's, with the jerseys up to the face, that's circulating Twitter and, you know, it's taking on like a meme life of its own. And, you know, I think, you know, you're right about the Lakers thing. And the Paul George thing is interesting because, you know, that Nets pick when the Cavs got it, and I'm writing about this at Fear the Sword, so look for that in the coming days. But the Nets pick right now is not necessarily what the Cavs, I think, thought it was going to be or hoped it would be when they got it. They thought that pick was going to be top three because the Nets were going to be that bad. The Nets are now 3.5 games out of the playoffs. They play hard. They have a decent number of good players. You know, they're gonna rebuild Digital Okafor, and you know, I've talked about D'Angelo before and how he's kind of been let loose to do a little bit of his own stuff there. And you know, the East is bad. that certainly helps them. And that pick, even if they miss the playoffs, it's probably not going to be top three in terms of odds. It's going to be a 1% chance of the number one pick. So maybe they're more inclined to package that with something to use their own first round pick and that pick to get Paul George, who would be a rental. So maybe it's not as crazy now to think that Nets pick is tradable for a guy like Paul George.
The way I would kind of put it is, if the end goal is either keeping or landing LeBron, there is no such thing as an asset not worth giving up, right? Like, if the Cavs are thinking to themselves, if the difference between LeBron staying or going is landing Paul George and then somehow convincing him to stick around in Cleveland so long as LeBron is playing there. There's no such thing as an asset they shouldn't be willing to give up, within reason. Like, obviously, LeBron would be one such thing. But the Brooklyn pick, to me, I could understand the hesitance on not wanting to do that. But we were there with Kobe when the Lakers went after Dwight and they went after Nash. At the end of his career, the thinking was, yes, the Lakers weren't trying to keep him in LA, but it was, this is the last few years that we're going to have a chance at running at a title with this guy, so let's really get after it. And if that's what the Cavs are doing while also trying to convince LeBron to stay, then I can't knock that thinking. And for the Lakers, it's the same kind of thinking, but to land him. If the Lakers think they legitimately have a chance at if you think that the Lakers, I'm sorry, I got a random text from somebody with Jeannie Buss in it. But if you think if you're the Lakers and you think you can land LeBron, then why not trade D'Angelo Russell last summer? Why not trade Larry Nance Jr. or Ivica Zubac or Julius Randle or Jordan Clarkson to open up space to be able to convince LeBron to come? It's insanely short-sighted, and it's a great way to hurt your organization moving forward for the times in which you don't have the guy. But that's where both organizations seem to be right now.
The thing with the Cavs that I think makes it a little bit different than LA is, one,
you have him.
You have him. And two, if he does, they will have options for when he leaves. And I think narratively it'll be a little bit, I think it's a bad narrative, but I think the idea that they're more okay will be there, because Lakers like, oh, they missed on this free agent guy. With the Cavs, it'll be okay. Like, well, you know, this is something they've been preparing for. I think you'll see things talked about a little bit differently, fair or unfairly. I think the thing with the Cavs is they will at least have the option to either just try to be a middle of the pack East team, because they'll have Kevin Love. If Isaiah Thomas is good, they could probably get him back, considering the point guard market and lack of other money at a fair price. You'll have Jay Crowder's contract. You'll have Osman. You'll have your own pick. You'll maybe have, you know, depending on what they do with that pick and the Nets pick, you'll have options to go get other stuff. So I think you have at least some flexibility there in what you're necessarily going to do. So it's obviously not going to, you know, this is the golden age of the franchise. It is, you know, highly unlikely that they ever hit some of these peaks again, because it's just, you only get LeBron once. It's very rare that teams, even when they're good over decades, get players that are this good multiple times. It just doesn't happen unless you're the Lakers or the Celtics and are good in several decades. And, you know, look at the Bulls, right? Like, the Bulls had Jordan, and even though they had those good teams with Rose and Noah, you know, those guys never quite, they're never on that same level. It's very rare to get a guy like this. So at least they had him for two stretches of time. They'll be able to pick of, do we want to bottom out, flip everybody and build around our young guys, or do we want to try to just develop them into something kind of like more on lines of what Indiana is doing, as opposed to just a complete teardown a la Philly or a la Brooklyn.
Do you think the Cavs fan base, now that like, it was one thing when the Cavs were just always bad and the fan base was kind of used to them being always bad, but now that they've tasted success, do you think they are capable of going through that kind of rebuild? Because one theory that I keep going back and forth on is that the Lakers, I don't think are, the Lakers fan base is capable of withstanding a rebuild from start to finish centralized on youth. But do you think the Cavs fan base would be able to undergo that at this point?
I think to an extent, but I think I interact with the hardcores more than I do your casuals. And I think the Cavs are always going to be at their lowest point are going to be behind the Indians and behind the Browns. That's going to be a thing. As sad as that is for them being behind the Browns, like, that's just the reality of Cleveland in a lot of ways. At the same time, I think this year you've seen something where I think people, I don't know exactly how to quantify this, and I don't have the data to necessarily explain this, but I feel like in my brain, this is the year I've seen the most ads for tickets for regular season games. It's been a very hard ticket to get the last couple of years. Like, if you didn't get them at the start of the year, it was always a SeatGeek thing. Like, even for this Lakers game, which normally it would be a sellout, you had to have, there were ads in to buy tickets up until yesterday, and maybe even today. I didn't see them today, but they could have, you know, ran one same day. That's interesting in itself. But it'd be interesting to see how they would react, because I think some people would say that was the glory years. Attendance certainly dipped when LeBron left, you know, the first time. So it would be interesting to see what it'd be like if there's not that hatred towards him like there was the first time, that kind of pushed people away from the team in general and made it hard to root for the team, because it was just, you knew it was just nothing was going to be good once he left.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That kind of perspective is really important. All right, so aside from that, not really, not much to talk about, right? 33 minutes in. just your typical night when the Lakers face off against the Cavs. Of course, we got a meme to come out of that game. And of course, we have a story heading into the game. It was a fun game. I thought it was always kind of understood that the Lakers were going to win. It wasn't quite like, you know, there was never the back and forth aspect of it. But you got a few highlights and you got a few nice plays from the players that you would like to get that from. Anything else that you wanted to talk about before we get out of here?
No, I'm just, you know, I'm glad we can get this in before the internet gets slowed down. So, you know, those other basketball podcast networks are running faster than us.
Absolutely. All right. So that'll do it for this episode, brought to you by mybookie.ag. I am Anthony Irwin. That was Chris Manning. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Make sure you're following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, and Lakers. Lakers Nation and Lakers Outsiders, and we will talk to you as soon as we grab Harrison away from the Star Wars nerds, which I'm not convinced is a guaranteed thing to actually happen. So, Chris, if you actually do want to co-host the show with me, maybe consider making that move out here to the West Coast.
Yeah, and I'll make sure I co-host the show. We didn't even talk about this, but I'm going to be wearing a Supreme shooting sleeve like J.R. Smith. That's what I'll be doing.
I'm so old at this point that these brands are popping up and I have no idea what is going on. Like, none whatsoever.
I cannot afford Supreme, nor do I have the style to, or the swagger to pull that off, but I at least knew what it was. And I got two G-chats from people that I will not out on this podcast that asked me what it was, and I felt pretty cool. And I'm going to leave it at that.
So I just found out Supreme is expensive.
And Kelly Oubre, yeah, it's like very expensive streetwear. Like Tyler Creator wears it. A lot of rappers wear it. And Kelly Oubre wore one the other day and was totally had to take it off. And a Supreme shooting sleeve.
That's, because it's not NBA sanctioned, I guess?
But the thing, the sleeve had a Nike logo on it. So I wonder. I don't know. I am thinking way too much about this, honestly. It's kind of a problem. But like I have questions about like the shooting sleeve.
I know it's Jordan Clarkson's favorite brand. I think Harrison has mentioned that to me at some point. But yeah, I'm old, so it's everything I can possibly do to try to stay up on lingo and language and stuff, but as soon as we start talking about brands, there I go.
Those U's.
Damn millennials.
Damn,
have a good one, everybody.